When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to The Rest Is Football with Alan Shearer, Micah Richards and me, Gary Lineker. It's been a big weekend of Premier League and FA Cup action. Well, I think we've enjoyed it. Some thrilling stuff. There were some huge games in the relegation battle too. Arsenal returned to the top of the table and the three of us enjoyed a day out at Wembley on Saturday for Manchester City versus Chelsea. We'll reflect on all of those shortly. But we have to start today, don't we, with the incredible FA Cup semi-final, which has just finished between Coventry and Manchester United. Oh boy, you had to feel for the Coventry players, didn't you? I mean, what a monumental effort they made.
Unbelievable. I mean, they were gone. They were dead and buried, weren't they? There was no coming back, or so we thought. And then, wow, second half, I mean, the way they rallied, they got the first goal, you could hear the little bit of belief from the crowd, and they sort of fed off that, didn't they, the players? And then they were, I mean, it was just full steam ahead, and then they got the second, and they got, it was like, oh my God, the third. And you think, if they pull this off, this will be the greatest ever comeback in FA Cup history.
I think it would
be. Maybe it's like, oh. And then, I mean, the offside that they had to endure, didn't it? It was like so painful.
So close, wasn't it?
So close.
Tight. Tight. I mean, most people are going, bloody VAR, ruined a great day again. I mean, you can also say, well, he probably was a, you know, whisker offside, but...
Yeah, you felt sorry for them. I mean, we said yesterday, didn't we? You said to me and Micah, what's going to happen tomorrow? And we both sort of said, we haven't got a clue because we don't know what Man United are going to turn up because they've been so inconsistent. I mean, they were good in the first half. They were shambolic in the second half. They were made to look shambolic by Coventry, though. But Jesus, like, you can't help but not feel for Coventry and the way they went out. I mean, Pens is cruel anyway, but to be on the brink of going out, to then coming back to the game, to then having to go out that way is really, really painful.
They still will be, you know, by their own fans and everyone in football, you know, it was a heroic performance to come back. I switched over actually at 3-0 to watch Liverpool. then you put in the group chat, you put, blimey, it's 3-2. I switched straight back. Oh, crikey. Yeah, some game, Micah, wasn't it?
It was. It was, like Alan's summed it up perfectly, really. I think, you know, in football, and I think you said it the other day, didn't you, Gary, in football, like, it's magical things happen all the time. How is a championship side coming back 3-0 down and then getting the winner from Torp, but then it getting ruled off by, like, even if you wrote this as a script, it just wouldn't work. But in football, it does work. And that's why, and I know we say it all the time, but the FA Cup is so special because you just don't know what it's going to throw out there. I thought Coventry was brilliant. I was really sad for Callum O'Hare because I was with him at Aston Villa and he's done really well at Coventry. He's been rumoured to go to different clubs. Him and sort of Casey Palmer sometimes play, sometimes don't. And then for him to take the penalty, you know, when the screen went to him, you're watching on TV, he looked very nervous, but he's not normally nervous. Normally, he's very confident. And you just think, in penalties, anything can happen. But huge credit to Mark Robbins, the manager, for sticking at it, turning it round. And they deserve a huge amount of credit. But that's twice now. It was in the playoffs last season as well, where they lost on penalties, wasn't it? And then now, so it's a massive blow, but huge respect from me.
Mark Robbins, I was thinking if they went on to win that game, once again, he could determine the future of a Manchester United manager.
I think the future of the Manchester manager is already determined.
Do you?
Yep. Even if they win the FA Cup, I think he's gone. Mm. I don't think it matters whether they win the FA Cup for his future. That may be sad, that may be wrong, but I just get the feeling that winning the FA Cup is not going to be enough for him. When you look at the players, when you look at the attitude, when you look at where they are in the league, and all of those things, where they want to be, where they want to go in a quick time, I think he's already gone.
Do you think, I mean, wasn't it Louis van Gaal? Didn't he go after winning the FA Cup?
He did, yeah. He sort of got the message in the lift or somewhere, didn't he, after the game? I remember that, the big argument, whether it was right or wrong. I mean, I don't know it. It's just a guess, but I just look at the players' attitudes and the players' ability, and I just get the feeling. It's not just a hunch that I think the decision's already made.
Well, they've come in and already made changes elsewhere, haven't they?
Massive.
With, you know, director of football, stuff like that, bringing in various people. Ratcliffe's come in. So, you know, it'd be...
You know how it works.
Yeah, yeah.
New owners, new director of football, new director of strategy, new this, new that, new whatever. It just tells you that new manager incoming or new coach, whatever they want to go call him.
Don't you think it's time, whether the manager remains or not, for Man United to take a good look at themselves, though? Because how many times have we talked about Man United over the years now? And they've had great moments. Some like Fernandez always seems to pull something out the bag for them. But they need to be run better than they are now. And I think this is, as a collective, it's not about pointing fingers now. It's just the whole thing is just, every time, imagine growing up, Man United were always the team, the investment that they've made. And still, we don't know what direction they're going in. And I just think it's just sad to see. We don't want Man United to win because they've got our own teams, but we want them to be performing better than this. And I'm not just talking about the FA Cup. I'm talking about throughout the season, constant problems. And it needs sorting now.
It will. I mean, he's the owner of... What is it? He's a quarter share owner or 25%?
Yeah, 25%.
He's running the football operation. So he's made his intentions known. I mean, he's got Jason Wilcox in there now from Southampton. He's got Brailsford in there. He'll get Dan Ashworth in there. It's only a matter of time. A deal will be done with Newcastle. And I suspect, as I said earlier, that a new coach or a new manager will come in as well in the summer. So they are trying to shift things around and trying to get the best of everyone in terms of outside of the football to run the club or the football side of it. Then, yeah, I'm sure that his intentions and everything else are great, and it will improve, but...
Alan, let me ask you, obviously you played with Jason Wilcox. He was one of the wingers that provided so many of your goals for you. Did you see him when you were a player going into that kind of role in the future? Or
never did I see him going into that. Honestly, he was a great lad. He had the joke of the dressing room in terms of he was the guy that came in every morning and everyone looked to have a smile on their face because he was always bright and energetic and bringing all the jokes into everything. Never did I see him sat at the helm of Manchester United one day being the director of football or whatever his title is. But good for him. I mean, he was a bright lad, clever lad, and he was one hell of a footballer when we had him at Blackburn. He was brilliant for me, but no, I didn't see him in that role at all, no.
Another Manchester derby. You wait for one for over 100 years and then two come along at once, like red buses or red and blue buses.
Both of them, by the way, both of them will look back, whoever wins this final, and say, we got away with it in the semi-final, didn't we? Both Man United and Man City.
You need a little bit of luck to win a competition, though,
yeah,
anyway,
do.
Don't you?
Whoever you are. We've always said that, yeah. And both teams, whoever wins it, will have had their luck in the semi because they both should have been out of sight. Chelsea should have scored at least three goals against Manchester City, and Man United got away with it in extra time against Coventry.
It's funny, isn't it, when everyone's kind of, well, I'm sure Manchester United fans as well, they'll be relieved, but they'll also be a little bit downbeat about the performance, even though they've got themselves into an FA Cup final, which is ultimately what really matters, Micah, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. You see the players' reactions after, I don't know if you saw it, basically when they won the penalties, there's only really Hoyland celebrating with Old.
No one ran to Hoyland when he scored the winning penalty,
just,
did they?
Yeah, they all just went back to the Coventry players and said how well they've done, which showed a little bit of class, I would say, even if it was strategic. You know, they know the cameras is going to be on them. But however you do it, Gary, I think getting to a final for the players' side of thing. We know that the whole of the club at the moment, you know, it's bigger problems. But to get to a final with all what's going on, you've got to give a little bit of praise to the players. But if you talk to the fans, a couple of my mates are United fans, and they just said they're done with this team. They're even saying to me now they're not renewing season tickets. That's how bad they feel right now.
What, they don't want to travel up from London anymore?
But it is sad. But at least they're there, you know? At least they're there. There's been times this season where United look like they're down and out. Then they get a result. And then they pull some out of the bag. And they did again. Although they did deserve it, they're still there.
Yeah. They were, 3-0 up, it seemed all over. I mean, it's the most remarkable comeback. And they were, you know, even despite the penalties, they went so close in extra time to, you know, that one off the underside of the bar. I know Bruno also hit one off the underside of the bar as well. They're both very similar, bounced down just the wrong side of the line. There was a chance, wasn't it, flashed by the far post, Hadji Wright. And also, of course, the disallowed goal, which VAR kind of ruined it for them.
The thing is, though, you know, with VAR and the offsides, I know there's going to be semi-automated next season, but whether you say, well, level or an inch, or you're always going to want that bit extra. Well, he should be onside because, and we always say about, well, it also matters, well, where do they freeze it? Because we know that they can freeze it on the when you contact with the ball or when the ball leaves. That can be a centimetre or whatever it is. It's like, so you're always going to have controversy when someone's controlling that system with the offside.
Yeah, because it can't be 100% accurate. It's impossible. I mean, I suspect technology will provide that at some point, and I think, you know, the semi-automated thing might be a step in that direction. But, those sort of things, the linesman kept his flag down. Everyone would have said, you know, well, level's onside. But what is level now?
it's just the way it kills the excitement, doesn't it? It just kills the drama, the moment. Yeah, that's the issue with it and the problem with it. Yeah.
Manchester derby, though, which takes us to the Manchester City game. We were there watching that. They looked jaded, Manchester City, understandably so. And obviously, Pep came over to be interviewed by us pitch side at the end of the game. And he wanted to make a point.
And he made it.
Honestly, when he come over, so it was so loud, like you could see me sort of trying to lean in to listen because I had all the stuff going on in my ears with the crowd noise. So when he was saying or asking questions to him, I couldn't actually hear what you were saying, but I could just see his face like really angry. And then you're asking another one and it went. Obviously I've seen the socials, but what exactly were you asking, Gary?
I didn't have the chance really to ask a question. I just said you should be proud of your players that they bounced back and managed to win after what happened in midweek. And then he obviously went on his rant about the fact that they were made to play on the Saturday when the other three semi-finalists had not played on Wednesday night. So he had a point. And I also think in general, we don't really help our clubs when they're in Europe either. I've seen so many times when clubs are playing in the knockout stages of the Champions League, and sometimes our teams, if they're playing on Wednesday, they'll be put in the Sunday fixture before that. That would never happen anywhere in the other top leagues in Europe. They will always play at the very latest on Saturday if they're playing in the Champions League the following week, and often on the Friday. It works that side of things as well. And, I suppose that's a little bit, you know, down to TV and the rights, and, you know, Sky have, you know, they pay so much money, they're entitled to have the games when they want them, which is, it's different to any other country. We pay way more for our football rights than for any other league, really. So, and also, of course, it's the TV side of things that makes the league as rich as it is and as good as it is in many ways. So, as you know, you can whine, and I suppose ultimately it comes down to television decisions. Sometimes I think the weekend it was actually down to police timings of kickoffs and stuff like that as well. But I understand why he was a little bit peeved.
So I'm stood there thinking, because you know my stance on players playing too much football.
Yeah.
And I'm stood there thinking, well, okay, I've got to come back with a question here. So I'm thinking, there was two questions I had in my head. It was one, well, why don't you use more of your squad? You only changed four. You could have, you've got so many great players on your bench. You should have changed more. Or do I go in with the tact of saying, well, hang on a minute. Well, Arsenal played Munich away on Wednesday. They're about to, in a couple hours' time or an hour's time after the interview, go in against Wolves. So then Liverpool played in Atlanta away on Thursday evening, and they only had 3 days break before they play again today, being Sunday, against Fulham. So it's like, I just think these, you're going to get every manager saying and doing that. And I understand it, because they want to protect the players and they want to protect their team. And that's all they're interested in, looking after that. But at this stage of the season, we hear this argument all the time. It's because you get to the cup final, because you're pushing for the league, because you, come on, really?
It's what you want as a player, isn't it?
Of course it's what you want.
I much preferred weeks when there was a midweek game than when
if I was playing for Man City on Wednesday against Real Madrid and I got knocked out on penalties, I'd want a fucking game on Friday, not Saturday, just to get it out of my system. Frank Lampard said the same when you asked him the question. And he said, I just love playing. I didn't want to train. I just wanted to play games.
Is it down to the intensity, though? I hate to have to keep banging this drum, though. Is the intensity different now? Because players are getting more injuries. I understand your argument about there's more subs and there's bigger squads. Totally agree with that. But if you want to play your best 11, the game has moved on in terms of, and I'll never be disrespectful to the old pros. I don't say quality. I've never said quality, but it just, it's more high intent, you know?
I'm not so sure it is.
So it's taking your body. You don't,
I'm
you
not
don't
sure
think
it is either. No, if you've got no. the best pitches, you've got yeah, the best
they
physio.
They just pass it around more now.
They tell you now when you're going to get injured, before you get injured.
No, I have to disagree
seriously,
with this.
I mean, you've got bigger squads. You've got five subs. Man City, pass. But I know they work hard. I'm not saying they don't. But really? Come on.
Do you not think, Gaz, obviously, we know Alan's point on this. Do you not think it's more intense now? I'm intrigued to know from...
I don't.
You really
don't? I don't see it more intense. In fact, I see the pace of the game is often a little bit slower now because it's easier to keep possession and, you know, work the ball around because the pitches are so good, which you couldn't really do not that frequently in our day because, you know, for 4 or 5 months of the season, the pitches were boggy or frosty or, you know, not very good at all. But I think the game was more up and at them. There was a lot more direct when we played, which means, you know, you made run after run. I don't see it as particularly more intense now. And don't forget, players, when we played, you were allowed to steam in and kick people and like get really physical. Whereas now you just, you know, flick someone's toenail and it's a, you know, it's a free kick and a booking.
You're running around in 3 inches of mud.
Yeah.
Okay. If I could present you with evidence next time we run to show the years gone by, would you take that? And because I don't want to, I from my point of view, from someone who's come out of the game, I would say it is. But I don't want to just say that without the evidence. I would like to say, I understand back in you guys' time playing, it was more aggressive. Some of the fouls that I've seen back then and back and forth and all that sort of stuff. But I don't think, back in your day when you was playing, guys, you said there was one sub. I don't think players would be injured left, right and centre in the modern day game with the amount of games that they're playing.
They just had to get out and play.
No, but we can't. Come on, Alan.
And also, Mike, I think it's important to mention because you know the squads were so much smaller. Everyone on average would have played way more games than teams now because of rotation and that sort of thing. So you can get your rest. There's the medical side of things. I think it'd be difficult to find evidence because obviously it's only in recent times where, you know, people covering the ground has been, you know, measured and, you know, statistics and Opta and all that kind of stuff has come into the game. And there's so much data which didn't really exist when we played. But intensity wise, well,
okay.
I don't know.
Okay, would you say it's a different type of athlete then nowadays, where it's more your fast twitch fibre players in terms of quicker, more like James Milner sort of players, but also players who have got top speed as well.
Well, the game evolves. The game always evolves.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that's natural. And, you know, players, you know, human beings evolve as well. We get, you know, we're getting bigger, we're getting quicker. We get, you know, obviously that's just the kind of change, but, you know, it's all relative to the era that you're playing.
You're in.
So, you know, if we were playing now, Alan and myself, we'd have had that technology that they now had. We'd have had that, the nutrition side of things that is so much better, the health side of things, the checks. I would say probably players live more sensibly now and don't drink as much as a lot of players that we would have played with. But yeah, obviously the game evolves and that's normal. And we said the same sort of things when we played. We looked back and we thought, oh, the game used to be so slow and all that sort of stuff. But because I think, yes, human beings do evolve, but I always think the best players from now would have been the best players of yesteryear, and the best players of yesteryear will be the best players now, because, you know, of course you're right in saying that they're more athletic now. Every player is ripped. When I was a player, I was told not to do any upper body training because it'll make you all a bit wooden and stiff on the pitch, which is obviously complete nonsense. So we all have big legs and, you know, stuff and like skinny tops or, you know, yeah, a bit different. Now every player's ripped.
I think it's interesting debate, obviously not for now. We're just talking about obviously Pep and whatnot, but it's an interesting debate, isn't it? Because the old will always say, but the new would always say. But I agree with what you're saying in terms of the squads and the subs. I definitely agree with that, but just the intensity would be my argument. That's so.
Do you not think it evens itself out though, that with the better pitches and the better technology and the better sports science and the better physios and the better knowledge and all of that? Do you not? I mean, I know. I mean, I've said it on here before that I think perhaps part of the injury, or the games are not 90 minutes anymore. If you're lucky, you're playing 100, 105, 110 minutes at times. You stop starting the game now more than we've ever done because of VAR. You stood around for a minute or two, which is maybe one of the reasons why we're getting more injuries, because you have to stop and hang around and then you're up again, and how intense it is and everything else. So, yeah, it's a debate for another one, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've debated it there pretty steadfastly, I would say. Manchester City got through, didn't they? But Chelsea, they're making progress, though, aren't they? I mean, I think they've got to play a long game at some point at Chelsea. You can't just keep changing things every 6 months, can you? And, you know, they're on a bit of a decent run. They're playing better. They were, you know, they probably should have won, as Alan said yesterday. They had good chances, but you've got to stick them away. I think they've got a bit of a superstar in Cole Palmer. We've talked about him a lot in recent weeks, haven't we? And, you know, I thought he was probably the best player on the pitch. He didn't get the man of the match because the man of the match always seems to have to go to someone on the winning side.
It's ridiculous.
It's a strange one, that, isn't it? That they do that. But I get it.
Cole Palmer was by far the best player on the pitch, bar none, yesterday. But instead of just picking out individual, I really liked Chelsea as a collective yesterday. And tactically, it's almost like they knew all the jobs, what they had to do. I said really early on in the season, I seen something not special in Chelsea, but I was seeing signs of how good they could be. When you've got an XG of, you know, they should be fourth, in terms, I know Alan doesn't like the word XG, but these chances that they're creating, let's say, they should, maybe they've not got the players to put them away, but the chances they're creating are of a top four standard team. So there's little bits, and especially through the season, where if they just take a few of these chances and finish off the game, they're in a miles better position. And that's exactly was the same story in the cup. But as a team, I thought that was fantastic. They really were.
Not much XG around in our day, Al. You either missed chances or you scored them.
XG, what a load of fucking shit.
No, honestly, Al, I was the same as you. I didn't buy into it, but there's some really good articles around in how people are getting from one side of the pitch to the other. I agree with you.
How you get from one side of the pitch to the other? I thought it was because you meant to score goals.
When people are attacking and they're getting in certain areas, the only thing I have a little bit of a question mark is it's done by an average. So if you're Chelsea and Man City, the players in them positions are not, should be above average. So the XG should be higher. You know, that's the only thing I find it a little bit hard to get my head around. But I've bought into the concept. I really have.
You mean someone is sat thinking, perhaps he should have scored that goal? Is that what it means?
I don't think it's one person doing it. It's all data and it's all stuff and all that. But I'm with you, Alan. I mean, how can someone go, oh, that was 0.88 of a XG? I mean, what? you mean he should have scored?
Exactly.
No, this is what I mean. This, the calculate all the different positions that goes to the XG. I think it's really intelligent. Back, you know what? Having this argument with two of England's greatest goal scorers, I've got no chance. But for the ones who didn't score a lot of goals, it gives me a little bit of hope, that's all.
Do you know what? You look at Chelsea yesterday and Chelsea's XG would have been high because they missed three or four chances. Am I right?
That we can see with our eyes.
Okay, that everyone bar none can spot it.
Yeah.
Is that what it means? Yeah? All right, okay. Just so everyone knows.
No, but it's the quality of the chance that is created.
Who's fucking making that it's a good quality chance or not? Who decides that?
Because the people have the data and they get data from where people have missed and scored goals from and they average it out. So in that position, depending on who the player is where they get the XG or the team from. That's how they do it, Alan. So it's data from years. It's not just, oh, Mike goes through one-on-one, the XG would be 0.02. They're doing it from evidence that they've had.
Are they taking this data from, brilliant finishers, average finishers, or shit finishers? Who are they taking it from?
Everyone. That's the whole point.
Ah, right. So what may be a good chance to you, maybe not a good chance to me. Something like that. No, I don't know. Is it?
Yes, correct.
All right.
How many goals did Data score last season?
I think the bottom and top of it is that Nicholas Jackson should have scored a hat-trick.
And therein lies Chelsea's problem for the season in many ways, doesn't it? Because they've got a high XG. They're fourth place in terms of where their XG should be, Micah. But strikers can't finish.
But that's a thing. That's a good thing, knowing that if you've got a striker.
But you know that by watching the game, don't you?
Well, of course, yeah. Of course.
What, have you learned anything from Chelsea this season that XG has told you?
Thank you. No, but it gives me another sort of string to how I would look at the game. So I'm looking at, because sometimes I looked at XG and I was totally with you guys at the start saying it's nonsense, but then the intelligence around it and how they come up with that XG, I find it fascinating.
Fair enough, Mike. You're perfectly entitled to that. Let's take a breather.
I'm Anthony Scaramucci, former White House Director of Communications and Wall Street financier.
And I'm Katty Kay, US Special Correspondent for BBC Studios. I've been covering American politics for almost three decades.
Welcome to The Rest is Politics US, brought to you by Goalhanger.
Go on, tell us, were those donations you made, like Obama in 2008, was that idealism? Were you hoping to get something out of these campaigns that would serve your own business interests, for example?
So I think this will either make this podcast incredibly successful, Katty, or people will be horrified and they'll shut it off right now because I'm going to be very real with you. The Obama donation, I had gone to law school with President Obama. We were not classmates. I was a few years ahead of him. It was 2007. He was then Senator Obama. I had a check in my breast pocket. I went over to the senator. I said, Senator, I said, you and I didn't really know each other in law school, but I'm about to hand you a big check. Can I lie to my friends and tell them that you and I knew each other in law school? Well, Obama looks at me, had the best smile in American politics since Jack Kennedy.
Forever.
Yeah. He lights up. He looks at me and says, I'll tell you what, if you double the amount of the check, we'll take it back to Hawaii. Okay. And I looked at him. I said, you're done. I had another check in my pocket. I ripped it up. I doubled the amount of the check. And I'm going to tell you right now, I've been to more White House Christmas parties during the Obama administration than the Trump administration.
In this pivotal year for the United States, democracy and world affairs, Britain's biggest podcast, The Rest is Politics, is launching Stateside.
Uncovering secrets from inside the Biden and Trump inner circles and how they shape the world's most important economy, but also the global economy too.
New episodes are released every Friday morning.
Just search The Rest is Politics US wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Rest is Football with Alan Shearer, me, Gary Lineker, and Micah XG Richards. At my age, it won't be long before I'm an XG.
Can XL, he is not XG.
Yeah. I wish. let's talk about the Premier League. The two teams that were challenging Manchester City, obviously they were playing the Cup, so they couldn't play this weekend, but both Arsenal on Saturday and Liverpool today, we're doing this on Sunday, did what they had to do, really. They had to win this game, didn't they?
It's not about performance at this stage of the season, is it, guys? It's about getting the 3 points. And because of what happened to Liverpool last week and because of what happened to Arsenal last week, they just had to go out and get 3 points. And it didn't matter how they played, just collect the points. And both of them have done that. So they've sent a message out now. And That's the way it is at this stage of the season.
I think it's more significant perhaps because both teams had slips in the previous two games, losing in the league, and then of course both being knocked out of European competition. So to bounce back was imperative, Micah, wasn't it?
Yeah, it always is, isn't it? And I think it's tough, and I think that's why we alluded to in the first half of the podcast where Pep was so frustrated because it feels as though he wanted to make sure everyone's recovered because of the amount of games that they're playing. I think Alan's totally right. At this, part of the season, it's just about getting over the line. Getting over the line. Have you got the character after the disappointment in midweek in Europe to go again? And I really believe there's going to be another twist before the end of the season. I don't think all teams win all the games. I think points are dropped and it's what makes it exciting, doesn't it? I think in terms of Man City, what they've done, going out on a penalty, still getting to the final FA Cup, they've been brilliant even though they've been tired. Arsenal have been more mature, even though very disappointing defeat against Aston Villa, but bouncing back. And then Liverpool as well. It was so unlike Liverpool at Anfield to lose against a good Atalanta side. Obviously, they get the win in Italy, but it wasn't enough. But then to bounce back, it just shows you the mentality. And hopefully, it'll be a great race for us for the end of the season now.
You see the Trent Alexander-Arnold free kick?
Whoa. Gorgeous, wasn't it? Brilliant, eh?
Yeah. Something else, isn't it?
It's good to have him back, and a plus for England, obviously, as well. Yeah. Should Gareth select him?
So, Gary, let me ask you: you're Gareth now. What Trent starts to play into some good form before the end of the season? We mentioned this word a lot yesterday in our show. Conundrum. I like that word. It's got a real emphasis about it. What do you do with Trent? Because you cannot, you have to take him to the Euros.
Of course you have to take him.
It's imperative. Yeah. But right now, do you think he's getting in the squad?
Oh yeah, I'm sure he will. He's got something different in certain games. I mean, everyone knows I'm a huge fan of Trent Alexander-Arnold. I love watching him play. As a striker, you'd love to play with him. His crossing of the ball is as good as anyone's. His passing's as good as anyone in the English game, I think, overall. And he's also quite versatile because he can play right back. I don't think that's actually his most natural position. I think he's more of a midfield player, as he was as a kid. It was only, I think, when he got in the first team that he started playing right back. And he was pretty damn good at it. He was seen as the best in the world for a long time. He has obviously a slight weakness in terms of on the defensive side of things, which, that's why he could certainly play alongside Declan Rice in some games, maybe give you a different thing in there. If Gareth wants to play inverted fullbacks, he could play him in those. I think he'd be particularly good against, when teams that might sit against you a little bit, where he can get forward and just whip crosses in, against someone like, if we say England played France, then you've got Mbappe on the left-hand side. I think, we've got obviously the most natural person that can defend against him in Kyle Walker. But he's got to be in the squad.
I don't see it as that straightforward, by the way, with him.
Well, that's why I asked.
No, because... I know it's not because, you know, that's the question was if I were Gareth, but yeah, I'm not, obviously. And it's a lot easier when you're not.
I don't see it as straightforward as that. I think if it's maybe a squad of 26, then he's got a much better chance. If it's a squad of 23, then I think he may struggle to get in.
It's going to be a hell of a squad if you got the likes of Trent Alexander-Arnold not getting in it.
Yeah, maybe not Maddison either.
Well, that's it. There's going to be some really, really great players, you know, top players that are not going to make the England squad in the summer. And we know what it's like when that squad's announced, that all the attention, all the media will be focusing on those that don't make the squad, because that's 'twas ever thus.
I wish you made that fuss about me when I didn't get taken to the Euros.
Well, we were just relieved. Yeah. I still hope and think it might go to the last day of the season. It would be amazing if all three teams could win it on the last day of the season, wouldn't it? I mean, that we haven't really had that for an awfully long time.
I agree with Micah, you know, I think there's definitely going to be another twist or two in between now and the end of the season. I don't see every team wiping the floor and taking every point possible. I do see slip-ups. There's plenty more in the race yet.
There most certainly is. Well, let's stick near the top of the table for the moment. Another good win for Villa.
Oh, Villa are absolutely flying. Honest.
Playing some great stuff.
It's just so brilliant, isn't it? Morgan Rogers, who I mentioned a couple of times.
Fabulous.
We watched him in the FA Cup, doesn't it? It was Middlesbrough. We was doing Middlesbrough. Oh, I don't think I was with you guys. And I was like, this kid is something else. He's got something special about him. But he was sort of a striker, but now he seems more like a number 8 or number 10 dictated in midfield. It's just amazing to watch. What is unbelievable? He is everything that good about Villa at this moment in time. It's going through him. You've got your midfielders, give him protection, but anything offensively, the link up with him and Watkins has been outstanding. It really has. And it's a real diamond of a find that for Villa, because I know people knew about him, but he sort of excelled at a rate beyond belief at this moment in time.
Another exceptional English talent. I mean, crikey, producing them suddenly, it's crazy. It's quite fun.
We've got some real serious talent around at the minute, haven't we, England? It's brilliant.
We have, but they all seem to be playing the same positions, which is annoying me.
A lot of them, yeah. It was a couple of years ago, wasn't it? We had about 17 right backs that were all brilliant. Yeah. Now we've got 17 number 10s. There's a lot of talent in that squad, and a lot of people are going to be disappointed. Villa, you know, I think they're 6 points clear of Tottenham now, and I think it's pretty clear that fifth place won't make Champions League. So they've got to be strong favourites, haven't they? Because, you know, Tottenham got some tough games as well. Well, they both have, actually.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you talk about manager of the season, he has to be right up there at the minute, Emery, with how they're going in Europe, how they're going in the league, what a job he's doing. He's doing a magnificent job, and he's certainly got a happy camp. Mm.
They didn't really give him that much time at Arsenal, did they? I mean, obviously, Arteta's come in and done an excellent job. There's no question about that. But you do wonder, don't you, if they'd have stuck with him, whether he would have turned it round.
He could always turn it round. If you look at his CV, it was just a matter of time, wasn't it? Like, if you look at his tactics, I think sometimes when you go to one of the four, I don't want to say big club because Villa's a massive club, but a top four club at the time, it just comes with more scrutiny, doesn't it? And fair play to Arsenal for sort of holding on to Mikel, because obviously there's an 8th finish in there. Not saved him, but give him the confidence when he got the FA Cup. At Arsenal, you're thinking, okay, we're building off this and whatnot. But had Emre had time, he's definitely an elite manager. And it's not even a question anymore. What he's done at Villarreal, what he's done at Sevilla as well, he's so good. And his tactics, I think as well, people sort of seen him as a defensive manager. So when he was at Arsenal, everyone's saying the tactics are too defensive, we want to be a little bit more expansive. But he can do both. He can defend when he needs to and attack when he needs to. He always sort of studies exactly what the team needs, and he's been brilliant this season. Better than I could have ever imagined.
I like you called them Sevilla. like Aston, Aston Sevilla.
How do you say Aston? Seville.
Sevilla.
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 Have you been on the gin this afternoon thinking Sevilla? There's some orange Sevilla, isn't there? So you can get that now.
I'm on the Baileys, if Baileys want to sponsor us.
Well, if you keep doing this, Mike, and no one will need to sponsor us. They just get it for free.
Yeah, just get it.
let's turn our attention to the other end of the Premier League table. Big win for Everton, bit of a scruffy game, particularly in the first half. But I think the most extraordinary thing to come out of that, apart from obviously very, very important 3 points for Everton, was the complaints by Nottingham Forest, who made a post after the game, didn't they? which I've got here. Three extremely poor decisions, three penalties not given, which we simply cannot accept. We warned the PGMOL that the VAR is a Luton fan before the game, but they didn't change him. Our patience has been tested multiple times. NFFC will now consider its options.
Honestly, before we go anywhere, let's just say well done to Everton, because very much like the top of the table, at this stage of the season, it doesn't matter how you play, what decisions you get, just get the 3 points by hook or by crook.
Definitely.
Everton have got them, and that's all that mattered. But, and it's a good job we're not on the BBC here, what the fuck are Forrest doing putting that statement on?
I know.
It's absolute embarrassment.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I mean...
We told the PGMOL he was a Luton fan. Mm. I mean, what on earth are they thinking about? It's embarrassing.
Did Mark Clattenburg write it?
Well, it was either him or the owner, maybe.
I thought it was a parody account.
I had to check the same thing.
I know.
I was like, this is not real. Surely this is not real. I had to check about 10 different sources to make sure it was real.
I thought exactly the same. I mean, you know, I think they got a point with one or two of those decisions, that they did go against them.
One of them anyway, I think. The last one
was definitely, I think the handball would, you know, been given a lot of times this season, but I don't think handball should be given for that personally. But, you know, his hand was away from his body in the first one. If he'd have given it on the field, they'd have definitely not turned it over, because he did, you know, you could certainly make a case for all three. So, I can see why they're peeved, but that kind of reaction is, that's not.
You're absolutely right. I think the referee, I think Anthony Taylor and the VAR, Stuart Atwell, I thought they had a terrible afternoon. But you just can't behave like that if you're a professional football club, a top, one of the best. You're talking about a team that have been like amazing over the years, European Cup and all of that, and yet behaving like that, there's just no class to it. However angry you are, however upset you are, you cannot be putting statements out like that. And obviously they'll get charged for doing that. But the handball law is a thing to discuss. It's another point. In terms of the decisions, Forest have been hard done by this season. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah,
and the standard of refereeing is nowhere near good enough at all. And we've discussed that.
It's a very difficult thing. I think what's happened here, Alan, I don't know about you, is that, you know, once again, I think they've gone, right, we're going to have the high bar again. And then when decisions are not given, everyone's complaining. And I know what happened now. They'll lower it again. And then people will start complaining, saying, that's not enough for VAR to intervene. I think it's very difficult for them. Do you think it's okay for football clubs to make statements taking the piss?
In terms of having a bit of fun and trying to create something different, then yes. But not when it's a serious matter like that.
Have you seen Crystal Palace's tweet?
No.
Crystal Palace went, 5 extremely good goals, 2 goals conceded, which we simply have to accept. CPFC will now enjoy their Sunday. very good.
That's funny.
That is funny. But come on, guys. We have to look at it from Nottingham Forest's point of view as well. The decisions that's gone against them this season, whether it was right or not to put the statement, we're all on the same page. It's wrong. They made a bad call on that. But when you've employed a referee to come on and work for you, and then you get these decisions, not one, two, but 3 conscious decisions. And then if you look at the handball in the semi-final against Wan-Bissaka, and you look at the one with Ashley Young,
they were the same.
It's exactly the same thing. One was given and one wasn't given.
The other semi-final yesterday, Jack Grealish as well.
Yeah.
In the wall.
In the wall. Very similar. Very similar. Actually further away, so he probably had more chance to get his arm out of the way. But, yeah. I mean, we talk about consistency, but, I mean, I understand why you can never get consistency because, you know, it's different human beings refereeing different matches. Human beings see it one way. It is a thankless task being a referee, and I get that. But they have supposedly got the backup of VAR now. But it's that thing, isn't it, that one, you know, in one game this is given, then it's not given, and what is and what isn't, it's
Yeah, but it's the fact of if you're a defender and at first it was running motion, then it was silhouette, and then it was proximity. All these fancy words, like people who've played the football know, or even if you watch the football, you know what is a handball and what is not. All these daft things. If you're running like this and it hits your hand, it's not a handball. Mm. If you go put your hand towards the ball, it's a handball. It's as simple as that. Like I don't think Ashley Young should have been given, and I don't think Wan-Bissaka should have been given, because really what are you supposed to do in that situation? But the problem is one's given and one's not. So how are we supposed to know what a penalty is and what's not? I think that is, and for the players and the staff and the fans and everyone associated with football, it's too hard. It's too hard.
Totally agree. Are Burnley going to make the great escape?
You know what? I would love it. I'll tell you what. I would love it if you do that, just to make this idiot, Alan Shearer, look like a right dickhead. I would love it.
Well, he does resemble one anyway. So.
Because he was saying Burnley are down by Christmas, he was saying it. And now you just never know in this league. I said, don't write off Burnley till the very end.
Glimmer of hope for them.
A glimmer.
Yeah. Did you see what happened to Leverkusen this afternoon, by the way?
No, I did not, actually. What happened?
They went 1-0 down to Dortmund. Let me remind everyone that Leverkusen have not lost a single football match this season in any competition. They went 1 down against Dortmund away in the 81st minute and equalised in the 97th minute.
Again?
They didn't. They didn't.
They did. It just happened, yeah.
Wow.
How many times?
How often have they done that at the very end of a game?
They're going to do it, aren't they? They're going to go right throughout the season.
Surely not.
Oh, my.
So Leverkusen have got 4 league games left, the German Cup final, and they're in the semi-finals of the Europa League. So that's 2 semi-finals and possibly a final. Therefore, they're 8 games away from probably pulling off the finest achievement in the history of club football, I would say.
I think it would. Unbelievable. I think it would be.
Unbelievable, Jeff.
Unbelievable, Jeff. And on that note, we'll call it a day. Another brilliant football weekend. We'll be back on Wednesday with our question and answer episode. But for now, that's it. Goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me. Have a good weekend.